This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in. It's another hour of the Lombardi Line live from downtown Las Vegas, presented as always by BetMGM. We're in for Stormy and Michael today, although there is a fresh edition of the GM Shuffle coming up. That'll be released a little bit later today. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi talking all of their NFL draft reactions. I'm Ben Wilson. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. We have our own NFL draft reactions, though. We're smart people, John. We can draw our own conclusions on this stuff.
So these are great because here's the thing: grades are arbitrary and silly and dumb.
Yeah.
And the reason why I bring this up is so we're going to you mentioned we talked with Thor, right? So
Thor Nystrom here in 15 minutes.
Yeah, I was gonna say 15 seconds. Well, I don't want to take up his time. So he gave the Arizona Cardinals a D+ for his draft grade, right? You had the Arizona Cardinals as one of your favorite
drafts. My favorite draft.
Well, and here's the thing. This is what I was going to say, too. And PFF gave them an A+. So, like, this is – it's all just, you know, weird, arbitrary nonsense. You like what you like. Who knows? And I don't know how you grade drafts for me because, I'm not afraid of the three words that everybody's afraid of. I don't know. I don't know what – I don't know. Cameron Young, the defensive interior tackle for Mississippi State, is going to do for the Seattle Seahawks, right? But I do know a little bit about the guys at the top. So I grade a little bit more skewed and weighted toward what Seahawks or Seahawks teams do at the top of the draft as opposed to at the bottom of the draft.
No doubt. Do I have insight onto the 250 some players who were drafted? No, it's more of like how I look at this. And I do like, as we go into our best and worst draft classes to start this hour, I like the Cardinals. It's not a team I'm going to now be looking to bet over on the win total and betting futures.
Right.
I guess it's a team that has a lot of work to do and they have objectively a bottom three roster. And that was heading into the draft. Probably still is a bottom three roster now coming out of the draft, but it's more just where these teams are at from a philosophical perspective. And when you are, especially in a rebuild team like the Arizona Cardinals, like you don't want to get too cute and try to look at, all right, let's just get one piece that we feel can change the franchise. You always hear GMs talk about that. The reality is very few players can actually turn around a franchise that has so many holes. So I like what Arizona did to set themselves up for the future, and setting aside the players that Arizona drafted this time around, they have 11 draft picks next year, 6 in the top 3 rounds,
mm-hmm.
and they have Houston's first round pick, which you can draw a pretty clear line, JVT, to a situation where Arizona has 2 top 5 picks next year. If they continue to be bad and if Houston continues to be bad, at the very least, you assume those will be 2 top 10 to 12 picks. But that could be a very, very optimal situation for Arizona heading into 2024. But I like the fact they were able to trade down and still got the number one player on their board. I consider that a win. I liked Paris Johnson coming in as the clear-cut best offensive lineman. You heard some arguments coming in ahead of the draft that maybe there were some other more exotic names who could turn into bigger and better overall offensive lineman prospects. But Johnson's rock solid, and he gives you a legit stud left tackle to protect a quarterback in Kyler Murray, who had very little protection last year. So I like the way Arizona went. They got their guy, and they traded down to do it, and they got picks, and I know they traded down and then back up, but they got picks in order to do that, and they filled a bunch of holes. They get an edge in B.J. Ojulari from LSU, a team that had among the worst leagues pass rush numbers and general pressure rate numbers a season ago, and they also get Garrett Williams, who will come off an ACL injury. Again, this is not about like plug and play for week one. It's more long-term if you're Arizona. It at least gives them some defensive backfield depth, the guy coming out of Syracuse. So just looking at the top three guys, I like the way the Cardinals approach this. They have a ton of picks next year. I like the overall direction, even if it doesn't mean I'm going to bet them this year.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that you're talking about here. And like in the Paris Johnson selection ticks an intangible box, which is you make your quarterback happy, right? It's the guy that he wanted. Maybe he's not going to sit there and whine and moan and maybe become a little bit more cantankerous as it moves along. So I would not disagree with this. For me, at least when it comes to my best draft class, so this changed after the second first round pick for Seattle, but I love what Seattle did. You know, taking Devin Witherspoon with their first selection, number four or five, I was like, I don't know about that. But when they followed it up with being able to get Jackson Smith and Jigba at number 20, like I think you add to your two strongest position groups that you have. At corner, of course, when you're talking about pairing him up with Tariq Woolen across the way, so you now have two awesome corners. The positional value of corners is becoming more and more important in today's National Football League. And so if you're going to be able to have two guys that you can really trust out there and really start to make up, Ben, right, what made you so strong when you had your dynasty way back when, right, which is that Legion of Boom type mentality, that's a really, really good pick, I think. And especially when you pair it with getting Jackson Smith and Jigba. Now you have three wide receivers. It is awesome. And Jigba fits right where he needs to be into that slot. He could go outside if they need to. But when you have the two guys you already have in Tyler Lockett, and of course, why am I forgetting their massive wide receiver's name?
DK Metcalf.
DK Metcalf, thank you. like those three guys together with Geno Smith, who had a breakout year last year, just makes his job easier. I really like what they did at the top. And then you look around and everything else. Like, even you go a little bit later, you know, we know what this team's identity is. To get Zach Charbonnet to add to that backfield, because you know you're going to have a lot of run in that backfield overall. So to give yourself some depth is great. You needed help along the defensive line. That's why I thought Jalen Carter was going to be the pick. But you get Derek Hall in the second round, too, at number 37, a guy that's many people thought might sneak his way in to the end of the first round, too. I really like a lot of what they did. And then for the rest of the way, again, I'm not going to pretend to know exactly what these guys are going to be, but it does just check the boxes of what the Seattle Seahawks want. Depth along the interior of the defensive line in Cameron Young, adding a safety in Jarek Reed out of New Mexico. Many thought it was kind of a reach at the back end, but still fits the body type of what the Seahawks like. And then adding depth at key positions along the offensive line, including center and guard. I think what Seattle did was really, really good, man.
Well, and especially, there was so much talk about, will they be tempted to take a quarterback? And they clearly feel like with their personnel, they are much closer to being a contender than a rebuilder. And you have a guy in Geno Smith who had a career year. You continue to reward him. He's back for another season, and I like that they did not get sucked into that hole. Well, you know what? There could be some really good names out there. Why not take him? But Seattle understands where they are at this year. They got a chance to compete.
It goes back to like what my passionate rant about the quarterback things, right? Like where a lot of people had Hendon Hooker going to Seattle, but Seattle was a team that can, like you said, if you do the things right, we can find ourselves in the postseason. Like we're a team that can compete and win these games. You know, it can go better than what it went last year when you got in there. So I agree with you, like to not fall into that trap and go, let's take the developmental guy at the back end of the first round and waste essentially a first round pick that we're not going to see for a year or two. Like, no, go add pieces that you need. And that's why Seattle is up there for me in terms of one of my favorite drafts.
Speaking of who drafted Hendon Hooker, that is on the opposite end for you. Yeah. The Detroit Lions take Hooker. Now look, you get him in the third round. He was a guy who people thought would go potentially first round. His draft prop over under was 31.5, but I don't think it's that. It's probably the rest of this class.
So yeah, so my least favorite draft class was the Lions. And cause you're right, actually out of all of them, that's probably my favorite. Yeah. It's either Hendon Hooker the third, or maybe getting Brian Branch at number 45, a guy who many people thought might've been a first round pick. But this is going to be like millennial analytical nerd, blah, 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 like talk. But again, waiting the top of the draft, you reach at number 12 to go get Jahmyr Gibbs, right? You are a team that if you look at the defensive numbers for the Detroit Lions last year, that was one of the biggest issues for them last year. Defensive EPA per play, the Detroit Lions, third worst in the National Football League. You needed to add there. So you do, but you add, again, going back to positional value, Ben, like an interior linebacker is not really what like changes things for you if you're a defense, especially when you're talking about a defense that when your weakest link as a defensive team was in the secondary and against the pass, you were the fourth worst defensive team in terms of EPA per play defensively against the pass. So when you look at like the issues that this team had, and to add a running back with the 12th pick, to add an interior linebacker with your other pick at 18, and then to get a tight end at number 34, like your biggest weakness was defense, and the only time you addressed it was like not really a valuable position. So I do like Brian Branch, should help. I do like grabbing Hendon Hooker that late because there was a guy, you know, a lot of people thought he was going to be a first-round pick. But to the most valuable selections, you added the least valuable positions. I feel like that should knock you down a little bit when it comes to a grade.
And it's one thing to like put up a middle finger to the rest of, you know, to the whatever the perceived mock drafts were and where other scouts had it and say, you know, we want our guys. But also you have to be smart about it. You have to say, okay, well, what's the realistic situation where we can still get one of these guys? And, you know, for at least for Gibbs, like I get that Detroit really, really liked him. At least they didn't take him at 6. At least they traded down. But yeah, from the analytics standpoint, I totally get what you are saying. And I feel a lot of the similar way about the Chicago Bears, who kind of did the anti-Arizona Cardinals, where Arizona was like, all right, we just need to stock ourselves. We need picks. We need guys to fill in holes. And Chicago kind of got, I felt like they just got really cute with this draft from Ryan Poles' end as a GM. There was a potential for Chicago to get who I would argue was the best player in the NFL draft at number 9. And they traded out of the number 1 pick and still could have got the best player in the draft. And they sat there and he went, you know what? A 2024 fourth rounder sounds kind of cute. Let's just keep rebuilding and stockpiling. They let Philadelphia trade up, get Jalen Carter, and then probably reached on an offensive lineman. And again, I'm not going to pretend like I can evaluate that position better than Ryan Poles, who was an offensive lineman in his career. But you get a guy in Darnell Wright, who I certainly believe is much more of a project type offensive tackle than like a Paris Johnson, a guy the Bears were highly linked to throughout the process.
And to add to your point here, one of the knocks on Wright, it actually tied into Hendon Hooker. That offensive scheme does not really make for, you know, a lot of, we won't call it hard work, but a lot of different things you're going to do as an offensive tackle in the National Football League. You don't have to do it in that Tennessee offense, and it's the same thing with being quarterback, thus sending Hooker. And I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people did think that 10 was a draft for Wright, a reach for Wright.
No, I totally feel the same way. And not only that, you look at the second-round pick in Jervon Dexter, who was had a productive career at Florida, but most scouts had him ranked outside the top 100. Again, felt like a reach on a guy who was taken 53rd overall. And Zach Pickens sort of in a similar boat there. Yeah, defensive tackle, and you obviously need a lot of defensive players if you're the Bears, but Pickens coming out of South Carolina. Again, those two guys in the second and third rounds, nice defensive players for SEC schools. You're never going to knock anybody taking an SEC player, but they're when you watch them in their college games, it's not like they jumped off the page to you. It's not like you said, oh, this is going to be a game wrecker at the next level. So you're hoping that you get the development piece from Chicago, but it's a lot to just assume for a team that has so many holes and needs. That's why I was not a fan of what the Bears did. Mm-hmm. It also leads me into my biggest pet peeve from the draft coverage. So you were talking on your show yesterday about you just can't stand when these TV networks show all the celebrities at the NBA games. It's like, we get it. All right, celebrities go to games.
Specifically at the Knicks game. Like, we get it. Yeah.
So that is very, I am all aboard on your point there. Can we please stop with the, with the 189th pick, Arizona drafts, Jim Smith, Louisiana Tech, and you see every single coach, scout, GM, they're dapping each other up. They're doing the bear hug like we just cured cancer. You guys just drafted some random guy who probably won't be on your team in a year. Right. Can we please stop acting like every draft pick you made the greatest pick of your life?
Well, it goes back to, I think that the Lions almost brought down the house when they got Jameer Gibbs, right? Yeah. When they showed them, it was like,
I thought it was like an SNL spoof of these teams almost like, but then you realize, this is genuine.
I like it. I like complaining about things, especially other people's happiness.
That is a VEASAN tradition, us complaining about other people's happiness. I'll get some draft grades from Thor Dysham. He is much more qualified to talk about individual players. Thor joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network.
Are you ready for the most exciting 2 minutes in sports? Become a VEASAN Pro subscriber today for just $9.99. You get all access to everything we do, including our upcoming Kentucky Derby betting guide. We have profiles on the horses, jockeys, and trainers, so you know which horses are the favorites, the sleepers, and the long shots. Plus, best bets from Dave Tooley and other VEASAN experts to help you make the most out of your Kentucky Derby bets. This offer won't last long, so subscribe today for only $9.99 at VEASAN.com/subscribe. I felt bad that I had to break the news to you that post time is 6:57 p.m. ET, which is right as you're going off the air Saturday.
I'm heartbroken.
I can tell.
I mean, look, it's the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. I'll really get bummed out. This is I've bet on two Kentucky Derbies in my life. Okay. What was the massive favorite like 3 years?
Justify.
Okay. Yeah. So bet a bunch on that, and obviously the massive favorite comes in, so I won a lot, tying in a lot of stuff there. And then was it last year or the year before? Medina Spirit?
Sounds right.
Okay. My wife's maiden name or her mom's maiden name is Medina. And so like 10 minutes before it started, I was like, yeah, Medina Spirit, 20-1. Let's bet it. Why not? So that's the extent of my Kentucky betting.
That was 2 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
That was the later disqualified, but remember, the ticket's all cash, and then
money spends the same, baby.
Didn't matter. I love that. That's how you should pick it, based on name. Not for our VEASAN pros would tell you differently, but I like that, the based on name. Let's talk NFL drafted and keep our discussions going here. We just talked about our favorite and least favorite draft classes. Thor Nystrom, he is much more qualified. Thor joins us right now, the lead college football and NFL draft analyst for Betting Pros. Give him a follow at ThorKU. All right, Thor, we have your grades out right now. I know why Elliot Bowman, our producer, booked you, because you gave the Indianapolis Colts an A+, and Elliot loves the Colts, so JVT will be happy with that as well. So what went into the – let's start with the Colts and then go down with your other three A-pluses, your Colts, Steelers, Eagles. What went into those draft grades on your perspective there with the A-pluses coming out of the weekend?
Yeah, the Colts absolutely destroyed it. I totally agreed with the decision to take Anthony Richardson there. I mean, that's – if you're going to take the quarterback there, you swing from the heels. Anthony Richards, like, you compare him to Levis, the guy that they were connected to throughout the process. Richardson objectively has a way higher ceiling. And I think sneakily, he might even have a higher floor, because certainly you have the mobility aspect with him and the unprecedented physical package. But he also has a pocket presence that Will Levis categorically lacks. And that's the reason that Will Levis fell down the board to round two, whatever. But the correct decision from the Colts. And then after that, it was just one after the other. They were just grooving pitches that the NFL threw to him. and just smacking the ball over the field. Like, Julius Brent's very good pick in round two. Josh Downs, I was surprised he got to their pick in round three, but he's going to start right away. Blake Freeland was a steal as well in, you know, when they got him in early round four. I'm wondering with that, are they going to kick Smith inside to guard if Freeland comes in and impresses them right away in camp? Otherwise, he's going to be your swing guy in year one. But then on, you know, like the rest of day three, they just destroyed all those picks too. Adebuare, a guy like that never falls to day three. In fact, he rarely falls to day two. A guy in that kind of physical package just tested like a freak. And he has kind of freaky physical dimensions as well. He's a little bit on the smaller side, but he has these ludicrously long arms. So you get that movement, that athleticism in that physical package. Again, like that guy never falls to day three. So I thought that one was great. Darius Rush, an objective steal after that. And then later on, they got one of my favorite sort of under-the-radar offensive guys in this entire class in Evan Hall from Northwestern, the running back.
So, Thor, I want to ask you, I'm a big proponent of, like, when it comes to betting the NFL draft and, like, the information and everything, right? I feel like there's a lot of stuff that's in plain sight that we choose to ignore because we get wrapped up in a lot of stuff. And I'll use the quarterbacks at the top for an example. You know, when the draft process got started, thought that the process was, what, Bryce Young's the best, CJ Stroud's the second best. By the time we get to the draft, that's exactly how it plays out. But we spend the months leading up to it trying to talk ourselves out of these things. Do you kind of feel that way when it comes to some of these drafts where it's just like, look, man, sometimes it's just as basic as everything we've been talking about. Levis is a flawed prospect. He fell. CJ Stroud's probably the second best. He's the second guy coming. I feel like sometimes we almost talk ourselves in circles because we get so wrapped up in smokescreen season when, in fact, there's plenty of information out there that ends up being true the entire time.
Yeah, that's 1,000% true. And for people out there, what you have to, you know, keep in mind is the stuff that you hear publicly, it's the stuff that the person, the source saying it, wants to get out there, right? So, like, you know, a lot of times what you're hearing, it's a team that's incentivized to do that, but the other one is the agent. And some of the agents are better than others at sort of getting in a media person's ear and whispering sweet nothings to them or whatever. And, like, we've seen that with Hendon Hooker. We saw that with Levis. Both those guys were overblown throughout the entire process. And then you've seen it the other direction with C.J. Stroud, where there seemed to be this anti-Stroud propaganda for the 2 weeks leading up to the draft. The Texan, D'Amico Ryans, obviously, he knows something about smoke screens coming from San Francisco. The Trey Lance one was the last big smoke screen that I can remember there up at the top of the board. And it seems like we sort of got one with that. Houston obviously wanted to come out of this draft with Will Anderson. I'll be interested to know, like, you know, what comes out about, were they interested in Stroud the whole time, or was that part of the building? The other part of the building was just like, let's take Will Anderson and see where the chips lie. That I'm not sure about, but you're totally right in that analysis of, like, at the end of the day, they made the correct decision there.
Yeah, no doubt. Thor Nystrom joining us right now at Thor KU here on the Lombardi Line, talking a reaction to the NFL draft from over the weekend. Now, not that as we look at some of your lowest graded draft teams, it's not like we expected, you know, San Francisco, you didn't have a first or second round pick. So it's not like you expected them to get a big haul. But I mean, is GM John Lynch just like Taco from the league now, taking a kicker top 100? Like, what was going on there?
Taco from the
That's
league.
That's a deep cut. I knew
you would get that, Thor. I knew JVT would too.
Yeah.
Glad you appreciate it.
Yeah, I love that show. But no, like, so, you know, first of all, I grade on a curve. So I only give out the couple A pluses. And by extension, I give out the couple Fs every single year. And we try to even it out throughout the thing or whatever. But I try to grade the ball or, you know, where, you know, judge the ball where it lies, right? So, like, San Francisco, I didn't give them an F because they had low draft equity. Like, a couple other teams, like the Broncos and the Dolphins, I graded much higher, even though they had a similar amount of equity. I just didn't understand what the 49ers were doing with their picks. I mean, like, you know, you had the kicker one, you know, it's like, yeah, we got to reach up because he's the best kicker and maybe someone will usurp us. But I don't know anybody else that was going to take Moody in the third round. In fact, I talked to one of his former coaches right before the draft, and he thought he was going to go round four. I think that's where the rest of the NFL thought, but maybe San Francisco was like, we have to take him here to guarantee ourselves of it. But I don't know why you're using that pick on that. And then the rest of their picks, I understood even less. Like, Latu was not great for Alabama last year. I know he's a smart kid, and I know that San Francisco prioritizes that. Like, you know, the S2 stuff and the different cognitive tests, obviously that led to the Brock Purdy pick. And Latu finished, he was one of the highest tight ends. He may even have been the highest. But, like, just on the field, his profile, I'm not the biggest fan of it. And then going down the board, I disagreed with most of the rest of their picks, too.
All right, let's talk a difference in perception, because I like these kind of conversations. My colleague here, Ben Wilson, had the Arizona Cardinals as one of his favorite drafts. PFF gave them an A. I think they might even give him like an A+. You are not a big fan of the Arizona Cardinals draft. Why? And why do you think there's that difference in your perception and what others think about it?
Well, in part, it's because of that thing I just talked about judging like the picks in the isolation. Yeah. Like that's what I'm trying to quantify and how well the teams did. The thing that the Cardinals did really well that I don't bake in as much into my draft grade, it was acquiring those future picks for next year. That was a clear thing that they wanted to do. Like they got Houston's first rounder next year. They got Tennessee's third rounder. And they also got Philly's fourth rounder in that, you know, wrapping up that stupid tampering investigation, whatever that was. But you get the three extra picks for next year. You already know your team's going to stink. And you know that Houston probably going to stink too. So you have a real shot to get two top 10 picks in a draft where Caleb Williams and Drake May are coming out. And yeah, I mean, I know you got Kyler, but that's fine. Like even if you're going to roll forward with Kyler, those picks are going to be worth a metric ton, especially if they're in a position to get Caleb Williams. It's just the picks in the slots that they were taking. I thought there was a whole bunch of reaches. I was okay with Paris Johnson, but like, you know, you just go back speaking about the trades. They trade back up to get Paris Johnson, and they gave up a decent amount of equity to do that. You could have stayed in your slot and taken a guy like Broderick Johnson. Was the difference between those two guys worth the juice that you squeezed to go up and get him? That I wasn't so sure about. I wasn't a big fan of Ojulari. He was more of a high third-round guy to me as opposed to high second-round like they took him. Okay with the Garrett Williams dice roll, but that's exactly what it is. He's coming off the ACL. You'll just have to see on that. I did really like their pick of Michael Wilson in round three. He was one of my favorite sort of under-the-radar receivers. He got a special ability to slam on the brakes, accelerate out of them for a big receiver. At the Senior Bowl where we were down, they put the tracking chips in all the different players. Michael Wilson was one of only two players at the Senior Bowl, regardless of position, to finish top 20 in max speed and top 5 in max deceleration. The other guy, by the way, was Trey Palmer, who's an athletic freak who just can't catch the ball, but like athletic freak. But it's crazy that Wilson was up there with him. Like that pick, but the rest of the picks on day three, I just wasn't that big a fan of.
Yeah, and he is Thor Nystrom. He is one of like, what, three KU grads. I had to do that to Thor, who I respect and genuinely like.
I don't know.
JVT has no idea what we're talking
Kansas
about.
I didn't know you went to Kansas, so yeah. Cool.
Yeah, that's the KU part. Rock Chalk for Thor. Thor always gives us a tremendous insight and is one of the most qualified people we have on our network to talk NFL draft. So thanks, Thor. And
I thought Thor was actually like an anime fan. I thought he was like Thorku. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? I didn't know it was KU.
It's KU. It's Rock Chalk. Yeah. I respect Thor and his KU opinions. We'll talk to Mike Pritchard. More NFL draft talk when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN expert leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Back with Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Ben Wilson. We're in for Stormy and Michael today. Great to have Mike Pritchard joining us as he does every single Monday here on the show. Pritch, I miss our Tuesday crew NFL shows throughout the fall. And the NFL draft wraps up, so it's always a special time for you. We talk so much about, like, you know, Mr. Irrelevant. What about the Pritch pick this year? Pritch, you were drafted 13th overall in 91. So Luke Van Ness is Mike Pritchard this year in 2023. I don't think you had the type of entourage, though, that Luke Van Ness had in his
No,
his
no. Yeah, nor did I have my pops, you know, do what his dad did either.
That's good to know.
It's fascinating with this draft now behind us. The appetite is still the same for a lot of teams, though, and that's quarterback and edge rusher, right? I mean, offensive line, you can sprinkle that in there as well, but that's not going to change. I mean, I think as bettors, something to file away is, like, for instance, next year's draft. I mean, who can we focus in on or lock in terms of those edge rushers or those guys that can be disruptive up front on a defensive line or an offensive line? I mean, that's never going to change, and I think that's something to certainly file away and keep in mind each and every year for the NFL draft.
So, Pritch, I wanted to ask you, as somebody who, you know, of course, played in the 90s and then looks at how the league has developed in terms of what they look at positional value and draft pick value, yep. What'd you make of what the Texans did in shipping off all those assets to go back in and get Will Anderson? Because, you know, the nerds, if you will, and I think I fall more in that camp, would very much make the argument that you gave away, what, two starters and some other guys that could fill some roster spots for an edge rusher that even if he becomes a Von Miller type, would never really give you the same type of return that some of those other draft kits picks could potentially be.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, JBT, because, you know, I wonder from this standpoint, like when there was 12 draft picks. So when I was drafted, you know, each team had 12 draft picks. And so that was, you know, forever in the draft. And yet a lot of those guys weren't never going to make the team. They were just on a roster to kind of fill a spot. I think each and every year we saw a number of teams have 12 draft picks, but they only use like nine of them. Like the Raiders come to mind. I mean, you think about the Texans with multiple draft picks. I think today's NFL teams are building up the draft capital so they can maneuver and move up and get top players each and every year if they can. Let's face it, the Texans, they need so many parts and so many top players that they're not done yet. So it's a process, you know, and I think to your point, I mean, do they give up too much, you know, for Will Anderson? We'll see. But can they also maneuver and acquire more draft picks again? Yeah, I mean, they can certainly do that. They're used to doing that. So I think the Texans know how to certainly have multiple picks each and every year.
Now, they've been around the block, that's for sure, on the early right. pick front. As Mike Pritchard joins us on the Lombardi line right now. Follow Matt, M.I. Pritchard, longtime NFL wide receiver, Falcons, Broncos, Seahawks. And that wide receiver run, it ended up starting a little bit later than most people thought, Pritch. At 20, Jaxon Smith-Njigba goes to Seattle. Then you get the four that end up all going in a row. So between him, between Quentin Johnston out of TCU who goes to the Chargers, Zay Flowers who gets drafted to the Baltimore Ravens, and then Jordan Addison out of USC going to Minnesota. Of those four, which slots into the best, just the best situation right away from day one as a rookie?
Smith-Njigba, I mean... to go to Seattle when you have DK and Lockett, it's certainly a quality tight end and a running game. I mean, this guy, he's going to go up against the number three cover guy on a defense, right? He's not going to see any type of bracket coverage. He shouldn't anyway. And therefore, you know, for an Ohio State product, a guy who, like Joey Galloway from Ohio State, went to Seattle, that kind of thing. There's a lot of parallels here. He's not Joey Galloway, though, in terms of speed, but he's an elusive route runner. He's a deceptive route runner. And he catches the football. And I think Geno's going to find out that he's going to be a reliable target too. Therefore, if you are manipulating the middle of the field, now you can take chances. Now you got DK and Lockett on the outside that can really help you throw the vertical passing game too. So I think this guy is going to have an immediate impact and certainly be mentioned in a rookie of the year category as well.
So overall, Seattle was actually my favorite draft. What would you make of just what they did too? Because when you talk about the pairing up and now their two young corners that they have, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, adding depth at key positions, was that one of the top classes for you? What was one of your favorite classes if it wasn't Seattle?
Yeah, Seattle was good. I mean, a lot of people are mentioning Philadelphia too. Yeah. You know, Jacksonville, I think Jacksonville rounded out their roster pretty good as well. I mean, I think from a quality depth standpoint, I like to pick for it. Bijan Robinson, I've liked his game for a number of years in college, and I think it translates very, very well to the National Football League. And we're talking about a five-year window, right, with running backs anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think Atlanta kind of controls that. The Giants, sneaky good. Shane, the GM, is continuing what he did when he was in Buffalo, along with Daboll. I thought they had a fine draft, too, a fantastic draft. But a lot of people are mentioning the drafts with the, you know, Philly and Seattle with the multiple picks. And they certainly did very, very well. And that's another point here, guys, in terms of a betting standpoint. There's only a handful of teams or very few teams that know how to run a draft or get it right. And so you can follow those and then certainly follow those into the season. I'm looking for the Raiders to be a surprise team this year in terms of win totals because I thought they had a solid draft as well.
Yeah, and you look at just from the offensive, defensive rookie of the year numbers, Smith-Njigba, 7-1 right now. He is the fourth choice. Bijan Robinson ends up as your favorite.
Where's Anthony Richardson, huh? Where's Anthony
Richardson? 9-1. You want that, JVT?
Let's go.
Let's go. He's a shocker that JVT is all in Anthony Richardson. And then Will Anderson, +350, your defensive rookie of the year favorite. Tyree Wilson, Jalen Carter, each sitting there at 8-1. So among the teams that fall more into the head scratching category, Pritch, which made the cut for you as were you coming out of the draft? Like, what are you guys thinking?
Well, you know, I'm sorry that you were the one to ask the question because I'm pointing right at your Packers there.
Do it. It's all right.
I mean, how many picks did they have for Pete's sake? Right. And, you know, it's fascinating when you can have Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers for as long as they've had them. And now that you don't have a quarterback like that as a GM, you're exposed. Right. And people are going to look at you crazy a little bit and see what kind of chops you have and how good you're going to perform in offseason. So it's to be desired. I think the Packers have a solid enough roster. I think they drafted well last year from a receiver standpoint. You know, they need some offensive line to come to kind of help out and be consistent. And then we just don't know about Jordan Love. And so I don't know what they were doing in that first round when they could have did so much more, to be honest with you, Ben, to help out that roster. But we'll see. We'll see if Van Ness plays out and works out to the liking of the Packers. But I think for as many picks as they had, I didn't think they did a great enough job.
13 picks. And that's the streak continues, Pritch. It allows Javon Walker to stay relevant as the last time the Packers took a wide receiver in the first round. 2002, right. JBT, in case you were wondering.
I did not remember that at all. All right,
I remember. It's just ingrained into my mind every year.
Well, I made the joke. So in all seriousness, Indianapolis Anthony Richardson, I mean, what do you make of this? And what do you think, if we're talking about Offensive Rookie of the Year, what do you do with Anthony Richardson Pritch? Do you start Gardner Minshew? Do you say, man, screw this, man. Like, you got a high ceiling. We got some stuff to work out. Let's let you start day one and let's let you go the Peyton Manning route. Throw a billion interceptions, but make sure that you know that this is how it works now.
Yeah, you get AR on the field. I mean, you pick a guy that high up, he has to get on the field. I go back to Peyton Manning, and you're a Colts fan, JVT, and you know, we played against the Colts his rookie year. He threw 28 interceptions. I think that's still a record. Can you imagine today as a rookie, in number one draft choice, as high as he was, and okay, you throw 28 interceptions, they're looking to replace you, right? In today's NFL, but with a talent like Peyton Manning, eventually he was going to straighten it out. Anthony Richardson is going to make a ton of mistakes, right? But his athleticism, and I think it's more important to start the clock on him sooner than later because of the talent level and what he brings to the table with that offense. I think the Colts could be a surprise this year in terms of win total and going over. You know, you got to love Gus Bradley. You got to love the personnel that they have on the defensive side of the ball. Even with his share of mistakes out there as a quarterback, I think he's going to have you competitive, though. More competitive than Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew, at this point, is a pure backup quarterback and a spotty player. Anthony Richardson is their starter, and therefore he should start day one.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see what the player prop season long come out on Richardson, because it's going to be that multi-tiered handicap.
Oh, my first-round pick for my inappropriately named fantasy football team? Boom, let's do it.
Oh, there we go. All right, Mike Pritchard joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Pritch, as always, great to catch up with you. Thanks for the draft insights. I'm sure for you, you're excited to take some time off now with the draft in the rearview mirror. Thanks, as always.
It's golf season, fellas. Oh, yeah. Golf season right now.
We're getting out there
Thanks
soon.
A lot for having me.
Pritch is great to play
absolutely.
Golf with. Yeah. As soon as the beverage cart,
I'm still trying
comes
to convince Pritch to join my fantasy football team of out of shape dudes. We need him.
That too.
Or fantasy football, flag football is what I meant.
Flag football.
I qualify too.
By the way, we will be getting some golf in Pritch. We're in that. It's the best month right now in Vegas to play. It's like 75-80 every time, every single day. So thanks to Mike Pritchard. We'll continue the offensive and defensive rookie of the year talk. There's also been some props that have been put up now season long already. And the Bryce Young props have been hammered to the under. We'll tell you why that has happened. There is a historical trend that does not look good in favor of Bryce Young, at least from a yardage standpoint. We'll talk about that next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense reminded to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. As we're back for the final time on the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM, been a great time hanging out with Jonathan Montobel in for Michael and Stormy today on the show. Thanks to Elliot Bowman, our producer. We got Nick back there as well, our technical director behind the glass. Everybody else helping us out downtown Las Vegas at our Circus Sportsbook Studios. Pro tip time, JBT. We've been waiting all show. Pro tip from our senior NBA analyst.
I was like, man, you guys use me for these too much.
We were like, JBT, pro tip, nothing else. But this is definitely very actionable info as we get into a new NBA series. And just keeping in mind, like, specific teams have been very different with how they've handled injuries all year. And, like, one team's doubtful can be another team's questionable and vice versa. And that very much applies to the Philadelphia 76ers with their injury chicanery and how they use it.
As we put it, you know, the injury designation is not set in stone. Philadelphia's been playing these games all season long with Joel Embiid. So keep an eye on his status. And this is where social media does come into play, man. You know, like I can share this wherever it needs to be shared, but I have a column up on TweetDeck where you just have all the NBA beat writers just keep that thing open and see what's going to happen. By the way, on this, first off, go to the NBA injury report up on the website at VSiN.com. Awesome, awesome stuff. It's updated every hour. And on top of that, Joel Embiid was at shoot-around today. Now, the question of how much work he did, what it means for everything going forward, we don't know yet, but we do know that he was at shoot-around. And I tend to think they're playing games. Now, does it mean they're playing games that he's never healthy and he's never going to play, or are they playing games that he's going to play today? I would tend to think that we're going to see Joel Embiid on the floor tonight.
Interesting. And you have another Harder Handicappers episode coming up later today.
Yeah, we got to run home and record it. So
nice.
Wonder what we're going to talk about today, huh?
Interesting. I mean, there's a microphone right here. You could just record it here.
I've got these pesky things called children.
Oh,
that can't really leave home alone. I mean, unless, I guess we know what kind of a parent you would be. But
I'm,
you know,
single. I don't have anything to worry about.
My wife's got to go do stuff, so I got to go lock the kids in a room and then record. So
tough life. Hopefully, they can make a cameo on the pot. That'd be great.
It's happened like once or twice.
I'm sure Kelly would love that. Very, very right. Funny. Again, the latest lines for that tonight was as high as Celtics minus 10.5. It's now come down. Celtics Sixers game one tonight, Eastern Conference semis, sitting at either 9 or 9.5, depending on the market. And then Suns Nuggets, not much movement in that game. Pretty much the same line as we had in game one when the Nuggets won going away. Denver minus 4 or 4.5 right now in the market. Total actually has ticked up in the time we've been doing the show from 228 or so up to 228.5 or 229. Those are the two games on the card for tonight with Heat, Knicks, Lakers, Warriors set to go tomorrow. So just to close our NFL draft thoughts and how now as you come out of the weekend, JVT, you get odds up, offensive, defensive rookie of the year numbers. So you're all in on AR.
Well, in all seriousness, right, and you're getting a little bit out of Indianapolis that it might be the case, but if they're going to give him the reins and just try to work everything out as a rookie, allow him to make mistakes and realize what the season is going to be, he fits the profile of a guy that we'd want, right? One, he's a quarterback, so he's going to get the ball in his hands every single play. He is an athletic freak who's going to be able to add rushing touchdowns as well as being able to throw the ball. And the Colts, by the way, like defensively and just overall, are set up a lot better to at least win a few more games this season than any other team that would who's starting a quarterback like Anthony Richardson. I don't think it's unrealistic where you're looking at 9-1, 10-1 for him to win this thing, that he would at least fit in the profile of a play that you would want to make on a guy to win NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Especially with the ceiling he has. I mean, you're taking a dart throw. It totally makes sense. Not only are these odds now up, and Bijan Robinson is the favorite from Atlanta on the offensive side, Will Anderson on the Houston Texans front, he is the plus 350 favorite on the Defensive Rookie of the Year. But from the player total standpoint, these have now been posted. DraftKings has hung some numbers as well. We'll start to see these more filter in. But the first one that dropped, it happened over the weekend. It was Bryce Young, guy we haven't talked about yet, JVD. He feels like forever ago that he was actually taken number one overall by Carolina. But his passing yard prop, it actually opened 3,876.5. It's been bet down 51 yards already. And that number that was posted in the last decade, how many quarterbacks do you think have gone over that?
Well, the way you're asking me, I'm going to go with like 0 or 1.
You should know. There's one that you should definitely know.
Because, I assume Andrew Luck.
Yes, 2012. But there are three. Justin Herbert was the last to do it in 2021. Jameis Winston. I miss Jameis. 2017 did that as well. And Andrew Luck. was the other one in 2012. So that's only happened three times. Makes sense that that's been bet to the under, as has C.J. Stroud. Stroud was 3,800 and a half. That's now 3,750 and a half. So not that I'm a big fan of like tying up bankroll and you know something like a season-long player total, but it's a good reminder just to already keep the gears turning that unders tend to be the way to play these season-long props, and especially with the highly drafted rookies, like you're going to see these numbers at least to start very, very much jacked up, and it makes sense that they would come to the under.
Yeah, although I am someone who I haven't made this bet yet because, like you said, we have a long way to go. But I'm very much in the camp of putting some money on the Carolina Panthers win that division. So
doesn't mean they certainly could. Doesn't mean necessarily that Bryce Young's going to throw for 3,900
I think it
yards.
Does. I think it does. But I think he's going to throw for 4,111.
I like that exact. Exact thought. And the touchdown thing is the same because he was at 25 and a half. Only three quarterbacks have done that. It was actually Russell Wilson 2012, Baker Mayfield randomly 2018, and then also Herbert in 2020.
I will say to your point, right, under Frank Reich, we've seen the kind of offense that he likes in Indianapolis, and maybe it's going to skew a little bit more run heavy and setting Bryce Young up. So those numbers would go under not only because of historical context, but also because just the offense that he is going to be in as a rookie, right?
What isn't the reason why we like would like Carolina anyway coming in to that division in the NFC South? It's a defense that was top 10 in most metrics last year.
Heck
and,
yeah.
That could, especially in a division where you don't know what you're getting offensively, like across the board with what teams are throwing out there. And Atlanta has made the decision to just, you know, they get another very dynamic offensive player in Bijan Robinson, but they're presumably rolling out Desmond Ridder, a very untested young quarterback as well, and a defense with tons of holes all over the place. That's kind of how this division is in a nutshell. Really.
I'm kind of surprised there's, you know, as low in, as they are in terms of the probability, like over 3-1 for the Panthers to win that division, given how good their defense is, right?
Yeah.
And given how good that coaching staff is, that was one of the first things I circled, assuming that Bryce Young was going to be the guy, because I think the world of Bryce Young, I think he's going to be a really good quarterback. And if you just get like a baseline of average quarterback play from him in his rookie season, and you have that defense with the talent they do in a division that kind of stinks, I'm in.
Plus 350 there on the Panthers to win the division. Frank Reich, 18-1 to win Coach of the Year. And I just know once we get into like June, July, and there's no, it's just baseball every day to bet on, we'll be doing the whole Coach of the Year talk. Will Dan Campbell get the same steam that he got last year?
I'm willing to bet. You said June or July. I'm willing to bet the under. I'm willing to bet that conversation comes up
pre-June 1st.
Two weeks. Let's go.
All right. So over under May 18th. 12:02 p.m. Is that what we're going to set it?
Yeah, May 2nd. How about that?
Okay. Oh, May 2nd. All right. Well, we're doing it right now, so I guess I already cashed the under. Campbell is the favorite, plus 850 right. For people who are at least intrigued starting off. And then, you know, the defensive rookie of the year side. Like, so Utah made the point on how with the assets Houston gave up to trade back into number three and take Will Anderson, and with how bereft of talent they are generally, like, it's hard to see a world in which Anderson, as impactful of a player as we believe him to be, is going to put up the type of counting stats and general impact that will make him be a front runner to win that award. But the natural secondary point on that is, all right, well, who else would really step up? I mean, doesn't it make sense? Like, Jalen Carter does come into a really nice spot for Philadelphia, but he also is surrounded by so many good pieces that he might not have the big impact that people think right away.
Yeah, I also think when it comes to, like, defense, you want a guy who's going to have a lot of splash plays, right? Those splash stats, only because when you're talking about media members voting for this, some are very simplistic, we'll say, in the way that they evaluate defense.
What makes you say that?
Yeah, right. And so it's kind of hard to evaluate. It takes effort to evaluate defense, especially when you're talking about interior linemen, we'll say.
Fair. So leads me to Devin Witherspoon, 9-1. Christian Gonzalez, 10-1 would be the natural. Or even Emmanuel Forbes at a 14-1 is just natural dart throw type guys.
Yeah, I'm looking for guys who are going to have like sacks, interceptions, tackles, easily quantifiable defensive metrics, if I could get through it, that would skew a voter who's not really looking at Jalen Carter attracting double teams and, you know what I mean, allowing a guy to clean up on a run play.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. You know, the Tyree Wilson point is interesting, and you know, Mike Pritchard really liked what the Raiders did, where you kind of compare like his, you know, him versus Carter, and they have the same odds. Raiders likely were not going to be in a position to draft Carter. If you think about the off-the-field issues, how the Raiders have been burned by players in the past with off-the-field problems, so you understand why they would draft Wilson. It's just, do you believe he can have an immediate impact in a similar way some of their other edge rushers have been over the years? There's been the history of that.
I mean,
can he be that guy?
I think so, and only because like it's like the Bud Dupree thing, right? Like, he was just a cleanup sack artist. You just play next to a lot of really good defensive ends who attract attention, Max Crosby, and all of a sudden you could be a guy that cleans up a lot. And so I don't know if he's going to be great, but I know that when you have the presence like that on the opposite side, you're going to have an impact.
I totally get why he is that second-priced favorite, along with Jalen Carter there at 8-1. All right, JVT, go record your podcast.
Yep, gonna run.
Do your writing. He's out. Get out of here. But actually, we are going to leave right after this. For Jonathan Von Tobel, for our producer, Elliot Bowman, I'm Ben Wilson. This has been the Lombardi Line here from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.